The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you, and enjoy. When I was living in Niamey, Niger, in French West Africa, one day a couple of my Peace Corps buddies showed up with this little Swami carrying a briefcase at my door. And he was from the Ananda Marga Yoga Society, and he was traveling all around Africa teaching people about meditation. And he went to the Peace Corps hostel to ask if he could stay there, and he couldn't because it was only for volunteers. But someone said, "Hey, Faust meditates." So they brought him over to my place, and he hung out with me for about a week, and we talked about meditation. And he was a very sweet guy, just traveling around wearing his little dhoti, just his little, just wrapped up in kind of cotton and a briefcase. That was it. That was his life. So we were talking about meditation, and he said, "What do you use as an anchor? Like, what is your anchor?" And I said, "Well, I use the breath." And he said, "Where do you focus on the breath?" And I said, "On my nostrils." And he leaned forward. He said, "Very bad, very bad." And he went on to explain how you really need to focus your breath at the belly. That's the practice. There's so much instruction in meditation and yoga, and so many different traditions that are quite ready to tell you that their technique is the best. It can be really quite confusing. So I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about technique. And what is it about insight meditation or mindfulness meditation that is unique? But I wanted to preface it with this story that I think really kind of sums it all up when you're exploring different techniques and finding out the techniques that work for you. This is a short little piece from Leo Tolstoy, and you may have heard of this. A bishop and several pilgrims are traveling on a fishing boat from Archangel to the Solovetsk Monastery. During the voyage, the bishop overhears a discussion about a remote island nearby their course where three old hermits live a Spartan existence focused on seeking salvation for their souls. Inquiring about the hermits, the bishop finds that several of the fishermen claim to have seen the hermits once. The bishop then informs the captain that he wishes to visit the island. The captain seeks to dissuade him by saying, "The old men are not worth your pains. I've heard they're foolish old fellows who understand nothing and never speak a word." The bishop insists, and the captain steers the ship toward the island. And the bishop subsequently sets off in a rowboat to visit. He's met ashore by three hermits. The bishop informs the hermits that he has heard of them and of their search for salvation. He inquires how they are seeking salvation and serving God, but the hermits say they do not know how, only that they pray, simply saying, "Three are ye, three are we, have mercy upon us." Subsequently, the bishop acknowledges that they have little knowledge and are ignorant of the true meanings of the doctrine and how to pray properly. He tells them that he will teach them not a way of my own, but the way in which God and the Holy Scriptures has commanded all men to pray to him, and proceeds to explain the doctrines of the Incarnation and the Trinity. He attempts to teach them the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, but these simple hermits blunder and cannot remember the words. This compels the bishop to repeat the lesson late into the night. After he is satisfied that they have memorized the prayer, the bishop departs the island, leaving the hermits with a firm instruction to pray only as he has taught them. The bishop then returns to the fisherman's vessel, anchored offshore in the rowboat, and continues his voyage. While on board, the bishop notices that their vessel is being followed. At first, he thinks a boat is behind them, but he soon realizes that the three hermits are running across the water as though it were dry land. The hermits catch up to the vessel as the captain stops the boat and inform the bishop, "We have forgotten your teaching, servant of God. As long as we kept repeating it, we remembered, but when we stopped saying it for a time, a word dropped out, and now it's all gone to pieces. We can remember nothing of it. Teach us again." Well, the bishop is humbled and replies to the hermits, "Your own prayer will reach the Lord. It is not for me to teach you. Pray for us." After this, the hermits turn around and walk back to their island. And a great little story. And the bottom line, at least in my experience over quite a few decades of practice, is that there is one factor that transcends any technique, no matter what the technique, and that is sincerity. It's the highest quality that you can cultivate in any practice, in any moment. So as you explore different techniques, sincerity is what's going to fuel your practice more than any technique that you're taught. After I was in the Peace Corps, I stumbled into an ashram, and as many of you know, I lived there for a couple decades, and for a couple of years, I was the president of this organization, and I once got a call from a magazine that was focused on high fashion, and this was many, many years ago, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, and a reporter said, "Are you aware that Donna Karan, is that how you pronounce it? Donna Karan has just produced a $300 yoga mat bag? You know, could you react to that?" And I knew the reaction they wanted. And so I said, "I think it's great. If a $300 yoga mat bag is going to get someone practicing that's going to change their life, I'm all for it." There's kind of a reductionism of yoga, you know, that this very sophisticated philosophy of transformation has been reduced to tightening up your butt in a yoga studio. And in the same way as the meditation wave is hitting, there's something like that happening too. You know, meditation is now hitting kind of a critical mass. You know, there's a level of acceptance in our culture that's been unprecedented, I think in large part due to the scientific studies that have proved how transformational and how valid it is. But now that there's money to be made in meditation, maybe you've noticed. There are apps, there are teacher trainings, there are web courses, there are personal meditation coaches, there are meditation supply websites. There's a new book coming out every 3 days, if you haven't noticed. And so it's sort of transformed, or has the possibility of transforming from this technique, which can dramatically increase your capacity for happiness, that can dramatically increase your clarity of mind. It can also be seen as a way of getting an edge on your competition by being more mindful than they are. You may recall that joke of someone who said, "You know, I used to be arrogant, but now that I'm practicing mindfulness, I think I'm like the most humble person that ever existed." I have ranted about the word mindfulness before. I really don't like the word mindfulness because there's no mind in mindfulness, and there's no heart in mindfulness, in the word mindfulness. So my translation is non-judging awareness. What you're cultivating is your capacity to observe without judgment. And when you can do that, applying it internally or externally, new possibilities open where they did not exist before. So what I'd like to talk about tonight is a little bit about, well, what is mindfulness? And I'd like to talk about some of the techniques that kind of fall under the category of mindfulness, because it's not just one technique. Part of the practice is to find the practices that most work for you. So I'll talk a little bit about how to use anchors in your practice. The body scan technique can be very, very helpful. Lots of different variations as to how you can practice it. And to talk a little bit about loving kindness and that form of practice. So when it comes to what it means to be aware, it's really fascinating exploration. And I'd like to share with you an oldie but a goodie. As I've said, I really try not to tell the same joke, maybe only once a year. So I think it's been at least a year on this one, this story. This is an old classic. So you can chant along with it if you know the story. This is a story about a Michigan woman and her family are vacationing in a small New England town where Paul Newman and his family often visited. One Sunday morning, the woman got up to take a long walk. And after a brisk 5-mile hike, she decided to treat herself to a double-dipped chocolate ice cream cone. She hopped in the car, drove to the center of the village, went straight to the combination bakery ice cream parlor, and there was only one other patron in the store, Paul Newman, sitting at the counter having a donut and a coffee. So the woman's heart skipped a beat as her eyes made contact with those famous baby blue eyes. The actor nodded graciously, and the starstruck woman smiled demurely. And she chided herself, "Pull yourself together. You're a happily married woman with 3 children. You're 45 years old. You're not a teenager." So the clerk filled her order, and she took the double-dipped chocolate ice cream cone in one hand and her change in the other, and she went out the door, avoiding even a glance in Paul Newman's direction. When she reached her car, she realized that she had a handful of change, but her other hand was empty. "Where is my ice cream cone? Did I leave it in the store?" Back in the shop she went, expecting to see the cone still in the clerk's hand or in a holder on the counter or something, but no ice cream cone was in sight. With that, she happened to look over at Paul Newman. His face broke into his familiar, warm, friendly grin, and he said to the woman, "You put it in your purse." So we all know what it's like to not be aware. And we miss things all the time. We miss the joke, we miss the point. And the practice is all about being aware. So there are many, many different techniques. The first meditation technique I learned when I was 15 was transcendental meditation or mantra meditation. Practiced that quite religiously for many, many years. When you practice mantra meditation, such as transcendental meditation or Christian contemplative prayer or any of the yogic techniques, you repeat a mantra or a phrase over and over and over again. When the mind wanders, just like we come back to the breath, you come back to your mantra or the phrase. And as you repeat that phrase again and again and again, it can lead to a sense of inner calm and to a sense of inner stillness. When you practice metta or loving kindness meditation, you're using phrases and an intention to wish yourself and wish others well. When the mind wanders, you bring it back to the phrases and to that intention. And over time, it can generate feelings of love or gratitude or well-being. It can be very calming and stilling. When you're doing visualization meditations, again, you're focusing the mind on an object or on a visualization. When it comes back, you focus on that, and over time, it can shift your internal state. Mindfulness meditation is a little bit different. It's not so much about making your mind a certain way as it is doing two things. The first of being aware of what's already here. And the second is minimizing reactivity to what's here. As I often say, to be aware of what's happening as it's happening, and then to be aware of your relationship to what's happening. So if you were practicing sound meditation during our earlier sit, you may have noticed the sound of the siren at the beginning of the meditation. And for some of us, maybe you weren't aware of the siren, but if you were, first there was the sound, and then there was your reaction to it. For some of us, the reaction may have been utterly, utterly negative and judgmental. Like, oh, I can't believe the timing of that. When I'm trying to calm, this ridiculous siren comes in. For someone else, it may have been a real positive association. I'm so grateful there are people out there who are serving and trying to take care of people when we're in need. It's a very different distinction between trying to make your experience happen in a certain way or to manipulate your experience for a particular effect. Not that that's a bad thing. And the difference to simply being aware of your experience right now and how you're holding it, how you're relating to it. As the phrase goes, it's not so much what's happening in your life as it is how you're relating to it. In this approach, you may find you develop a greater sense of freedom and steadiness, no matter what arises, as your capacity to be present to what is happening gets sharper and more clearer. You then begin to see all of your reactive patterns. All of your conditioning becomes more and more present to you. And you realize that you have options. In that moment between stimulus and response, new possibilities can arise. So many, many studies have been done on the practices of meditation. And we now know that different techniques light up different parts of the brain. There are all kinds of phenomena that occur when you practice. But I thought I'd just share some of the benefits of meditation. A lot of these have been corroborated. That with regular practice, it lowers its stress. It restores emotional balance. It increases resilience. It reduces anxiety. It slows aging. Reduces physical pain, reduces depression, it strengthens adolescent mental health, it improves sleep quality, it reduces fatigue, it improves concentration. Your teeth naturally whiten. Okay, I made up the last one, but all the other ones are true. And as I like to say, if meditation was a drug, it would be considered the miracle drug of this era. And when you look at the research and you look at the science, it's really quite staggering. However, it wouldn't be fair to say that meditation is suitable for everyone because there are contraindications to the practice. Certain forms of mental illness may not be benefited from meditation. Or you may need particular help in applying the practice. If you struggle with detachment, a meditation practice may not be so helpful. It can have a tendency to kind of underscore that sense of detachment. Those who have a tendency towards psychosis may find it to be destabilizing. People with PTSD should practice with caution. The analogy which we use a lot in this field is the big circle with a line through the circle. Above the line is what you're aware of. Below the line is what you're not aware of. When you relax and you pay attention, the line moves. You start to feel things, you start to notice things that you maybe didn't notice before, and sometimes there can be past traumas that are below the line that in the practice of meditation, you might need some help, you might need some guidance in that form of practice. I used to teach meditation at the World Bank, you know, for a couple of years, and I was giving an intro lecture in this big amphitheater, and I asked folks, I said, when you close your eyes and think of the word meditation, what comes to mind? Someone raised their hand, they said, peace. Someone else said, tranquility. A third person said, no thoughts. And someone in the back with a little smirk on their face said, pain, humiliation, and obsessive thinking. And I said, oh, you meditate. So there are many different forms and many different styles of meditation. I learned mantra meditation when I was 15, transcendental meditation, and I practiced that technique for many, many years, and for many, many years, I had no idea there were any other forms of meditation. I thought that's what meditation is. And only later did I realize that the practice of meditation manifests itself in different cultures in different ways. So all different cultures have their own particular expression. You know, if you go down into Southeast Asia, down to Sri Lanka, where the cultures were more isolated, you'll find the more orthodox practices as the Buddha taught. If you go into Tibet, you'll see how the practice kind of fused with the animistic culture. Now you have kind of the wrathful deities and the colors and the horns and the whole thing. They're all part of that culture. I went into China, it fused with that culture. Went to Japan, it took on the flavor of Zen. Went to Korea, it took on that flavor of kind of the fierce Kensho inquiry practice. And in the West now, there's this huge surge of what we kind of call evidence-based practice, you know, all based on science. That's one form of expression in this particular culture. So one of the more important elements in this practice is using an anchor or using something as a focal point in the body. I think I shared with you someone, they went to their first retreat, was with an Asian teacher. And the teacher kept saying, you know, come back to your anchor, come back to your anchor. And what he heard was, come back to your anger. And so for the first 3 days, it's like, okay, I guess I'm kind of annoyed with my mother, so let me reflect on that. And so in case there's any confusion, it's your anchor, not your anger. Pema Chodron tells the story of how when she first started to meditate, and if you're not familiar with Pema Chodron, she's a wonderful, wonderful teacher who's had a long practice, written many books, and really, really wonderful. But she says how when she first got instruction in meditation, her teacher kind of sat her down and said, okay, so what I'd like you to do is to bring your attention to your breathing, just to be aware of your breathing, and when your mind wanders, bring it back to your breathing. So the first set for 45 minutes, you know, the bell rang and she realized not once did she ever think of her breath. But she practiced through the morning and she thought, okay, I'm getting the hang of it. So she went back to her teacher after lunch. She said, okay, I think I'm ready for the next level of instruction. And the teacher smiled and said, okay, bring your attention to your breath. And when your mind wanders, bring it back to the breath. That's the next level of instruction. And it's quite interesting. If you ever come to one of our retreats, which is, you know, 7 days of silence and intensive practice, the retreat is always the same retreat. It's always the same schedule with the same instructions. And what you find is every time you come to a retreat, the instructions are the same and you're different. So there's a simplicity to the practice that can easily be overlooked. And that's where coming back to sincerity is the key. Something as simple as being aware of your breathing as you breathe. It's so simple. And yet it is a profound doorway. I'll talk a little more about why. So just as my friend, the Swami from West Africa, told me, focus on the breath of the nostrils, very, very bad. You know, focus on the belly. You'll find different traditions that will give you different instructions. And as I've often said, quoting Jason Siff, who wrote the book Unlearning Meditation, you can get instruction in one meditative tradition and find in another meditative tradition exactly the opposite instruction. It's absolutely true. In the tradition of insight or mindfulness or Vipassana meditation, as we do here, the invitation is to close your eyes. Well, if you meditate in the Tibetan tradition, the instruction is don't close your eyes. Keep your eyes open. How can that be? How do we sort that out? Some traditions say meditate with your palms facing up as a gesture of receptivity. Others, no, no, palms facing down is a gesture of being grounded. Others say, no, 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 you need to create a mudra, you know, demonstrating the Alpha Omega. And as I shared when I was meditating in West Africa, I would meditate with my elbows way out to the side so the sweat would drip off my elbows and not down into my lap. So the bottom line, I think, is to experiment and evaluate. One of the most powerful things I ran across through this lens of Buddhist psychology is when the Buddha said, no one is going to save you. You have to take responsibility for your own awakening. That's a pretty radical statement. And what that means is you have to take responsibility for your own experience, which means, as the Buddha said, try something on and then ruthlessly evaluate. Did this cultivate a more wholesome state or a less wholesome state? And evaluate from there. It's one of the things I love about this particular tradition is that this is not a path of blind faith. This is a path of verified faith where you actually embrace doubt and skepticism to really realize for yourself what is true. As the Buddha repeatedly said, do not believe a word of what I'm telling you. Verify for yourself if this is true. So, different traditions will tell you different things, but the breath is a very powerful tool. Some of the variations that we explored today with the breath. In the beginning, we explored the willful form of breath. And you may have noticed that when you breathe in slow and full and deep and smooth, it can have a very profound effect. It can kick in a sense of absorption when you're doing that form of breath. So I often like to start my meditation with the breathing in slowly to the count of four or five, exhaling slowly to the count of four or five. It's a way of gathering attention. But in mindfulness or Vipassana, you're moving toward an uncontrolled breath. So you're not manipulating the breath at all, but you're simply experiencing the natural flow of breath. And then the question is, well, then where do you focus your attention? And some find more naturally feeling the breath at the septum or at the nostrils feels more natural. For others, there's a sense of feeling the breath in the belly is a little bit more of a natural experience. And a third quality is to just feel the sense of the whole body breathing. Now, there are a few things that you can explore here. And again, this is part of the options that are available to you in this technique. Is you actually have the capacity to zoom in on your experience or to zoom out. And when you zoom in on your experience, it can create a deep sense of concentration. The byproduct of concentration is calming. When you zoom out, and you kind of, when you zoom out, it gives you more of a sense of foreground and background, where you can feel the breath in the foreground, but in the background, sometimes when you're relaxed and you can pay attention, you get a sense of the flow, of the stream, everything that is changing. So I'd like to offer just a little experiment with the breath, if you like. So if you like, you can close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, notice where you feel the breath the most predominant right now. Is there one place where you feel it stronger than any other place? Thich Nhat Hanh offers that wonderful guidelines. As I breathe in, I'm aware of breathing in. As I breathe out, I am aware of breathing out. And you might just take a moment here to draw your attention to the sense of the breath in the belly. One of the things I find in contemplation of breathing, in Pali it's known as anapanasati, the breath-based meditation. You'll notice the more you relax the belly, the more you'll be able to feel. Could you soften the belly? Could you let the belly be undefended? And as you do so, are there any new sensations that you can discover here? And if you like now, you might shift your attention to the sense of the breath at the nostrils. You may feel a little stronger at the septum, or is it possible to bring your attention to the very rim of the nostrils? Very subtle sensation here. Is it possible to detect a temperature differential between the in-breath and the out-breath? And for the next few rounds of breath, you might sense it was possible to even feel the breath under the little patch of skin under each nostril. Can you actually feel the breath moving outside your body? Notice the effect. Can you feel the imprint of this most delicate form of concentration? And what happens if you add relaxation? Could you again feel the brow, the forehead smooth? Let the tongue feel the lower jaw. One critical element in insight, meditation is this quality of concentration. Is it possible now to feel the breath in the foreground and to sense everything in the background? Can you sense the sounds rising and falling? The movement of thoughts, other sensations. Concentration helps you to arrive in the here and now. And when you've arrived, it opens up a quality of mindfulness or non-judging awareness. To be aware of what is changing and your relationship to it. Gently deepening the breath now. And again, just feeling the imprint of these few minutes of internal focus. When you're ready, then you can deepen the breath and you can let your eyes open if you like. It's important to remember that in this practice, it's not just one technique. That there are multiple techniques. And for some people, the breath is a very reliable form of practice. It's with you all the time. If you're not breathing, the last thing you need to worry about is meditation. And for some people, though, the breath is not very helpful. Some people find the breath actually to be a little bit agitating. They notice if I focus on the breath, I start feeling short of breath. Or maybe you may have noticed that maybe you got so relaxed that you couldn't even feel the breath because it was so subtle. And that's another byproduct of practice, is that your body will get so still that the breath is so subtle you can barely find it. So another anchor, which is equally valid, is to use the sounds as part of your practice. Another anchor as well, which we won't have time for, is to use the body scan, which I'll talk about in another talk, which is one of my favorite techniques. And yet another is loving kindness. So with our remaining minutes, what I'd like to do is to offer just a little reflection on sound and then just a few words on the loving kindness practice, which again, for some, is the practice that really resonates for them. So if you like, again, you can close your eyes. And take a moment, if you wish, to open up the sense door of listening. Notice the sounds are at the furthest edge of your awareness and the sounds that are the closest to you. And you may notice that you cannot hear better by trying harder. There's a quality of receiving . And as you open to sound, again, can you sense who you are as the one who is aware of the sounds? And we'll close our evening with a reflection on the heart. And you might bring into mind someone you know in your life who is struggling right now. And take a moment to imagine them, to see them. Just to draw their presence a little closer. What do you imagine they are feeling right now? What do you imagine this person is needing or wanting? You might reflect offering these phrases or any variation of these phrases that resonates for you. May you feel happy. May you feel safe from inner and outer harm. May you feel peace. May you feel free from suffering. In these final minutes, imagine that you could offer these blessings. You might bring into mind others that come into mind and just freely offer your well-wishing. And as you offer it out, is it possible to offer it to yourself, to each cell of the body? And as you're ready, gently deepening your breath. And when you're ready, you can let your eyes open. Of all the techniques that are out there, from all the different traditions, all some corroborated by scientific studies, some not, I like to think of those three monks running across the water and remembering that no matter what technique, that the true quality to cultivate is that sense of sincerity, the desire to be awake, the desire to cultivate wisdom, to see clearly, and to cultivate the heart. Cultivate your capacity to have a heart that is available and ready for everything. So in the future, we'll talk a little more about some of the other techniques. The body scan technique is really, really quite a wonderful technique. There's a beautiful technique of noticing the quality of thoughts, the techniques that have to do with opening and cultivating the heart. There's so many juicy elements to this practice, so many variations. But thank you for coming out tonight. A few quick announcements. There is a mindful discussion group, which is an awesome event. It's happening in the boardroom down that way. Your support for IMCW and the church and myself, deeply and vastly appreciated.